You join me in prayer. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our believer. Amen. I have been watching the beautiful game. Every chance I get, I open my soccer channel app to see which matches are in play on the other side of the world. Whether you are Craig and think soccer is boring, or Shannon, and think soccer is very exciting, whether it's fun to watch or just not your cup of tea, soccer is certainly beautiful. And I have watched some beautiful matches. Kicks that arch from a corner and footwork that looks like speed ballet. A graceful body finding a header before a goalie lunges out against gravity to guard the net. So of course, as any of us would do, I read a book this week called Soccer in Philosophy. Beautiful thoughts on the beautiful game, obviously. And one of those chapters talked about the morality of the aesthetic pleasure of football. Talked about how scoring is just one dimension of the game of soccer, which is why I love it so much. We don't just watch to see someone win. We watch to see someone win through creative and skillful play that unfolds before our eyes. There is something beyond the natural. It's supernatural in this beauty. Something beyond the bounds of what we normally encounter from human bodies. And sometimes it makes us gasp. And so in the season of Advent, as the prophet Isaiah is showing us these beautiful things that push beyond just utility into beauty, I'm thinking of soccer. Isaiah speaks of these oracles and visions of beauty and joy, of unexpected hope that exceeds our imaginations. And in the process, he cultivates our imagining for this world we call home to be different. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, the lame shall leap like deer, the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. Waters break forth in the wilderness, streams in the desert, and the burning sands become a pool, the thirsty ground springs of water. We've been hearing these oracles about a people in exile and desolation. And then Isaiah envisions not just a restoration, but something completely different. Deserts flow with like streams. This sandy wasteland becomes a swimming pool. Hard and rocky places become swampland. And to show us just how well the people of God will be redeemed, how incredible this change of fortune, Isaiah offers us another image. The blind will see, the deaf will hear. Those who can't walk will not only walk, they'll actually leap like deer. For some of us, that's a beautiful vision. And it's a complicated one for people with disabilities. Many disabled people who have cultivated lives that offer purpose and fulfillment within and not in spite of their disability may not like being compared to a barren wilderness. It's a reminder of bodies that don't belong. It's a reminder of the ways in which much of the Bible infers that disability is intertwined with sin and punishment. Over the years, I've heard disability advocates and theologians talk about the humiliation and anger they experience when strangers stop to pray them out of a wheelchair or out of blindness. The assumption is that disability is bad and being normal is good. This week, I read an article by Kyle Stevenson, who is a priest with cerebral palsy, who has frequent experiences of well-meaning people wanting to pray for his healing. He says, they would look at my body and conclude, it did not fit how they thought God designed bodies. They would decide something in me needed to be cured. I know that oftentimes well-meaning prayer healers see a disabled person and see suffering. And sometimes that's true. But a lot of us are suffering all the time. Some of us from physical illness or disability, but also from loneliness or fear or despair. Over the years, I've listened to the experiences of disabled people I've come to learn from who talk about how their suffering doesn't always come from the disability itself, or at least not from that source alone. Often their suffering comes from living in a world constructed for able people. Look at our world. We've made a world that's fast-paced and efficient, where weak people are crushed by progress, where time is money. And we make buildings and jobs and worship spaces and public areas that reflect those values. It was like that in the days of Isaiah and in the days of Jesus too. By the time Jesus quotes Isaiah to the followers of John the Baptist, we're looking at a society where disabled people didn't live very long. They were isolated and pushed out. We read lots of stories in the New Testament about how the only way to survive was through begging. And disability was so common. People became disabled through accidents and illness frequently in their lives. And Jesus offers liberation for those separated from their families and religious communities. Jesus tells John that people in the reign of God are not only cured, they are healed. Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are clean, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. See, look, the promise of Isaiah is happening in your midst. See for yourself, Jesus says. If you want to know who I am, look at the world that's coming into being. If we want to find out where Jesus is, we look for places of overabundance, where the miraculous has happened. We look for places of supernatural beauty and care, of love and kindness. We look for places where healing is unfolding. We look for places of the unexpected and the death-defying love. And I understand why Isaiah would want to announce this renewal of all things through the nature upending metaphor of the lame leaping like deer. And I know that there's enough overwhelming grace around us to shatter the accepted limits of our imaginations. In the world we see every day, among all sorts of bodies, we witness the extraordinary possibilities of our lives that are healed, not just cured, by Jesus. If we look at this oracle from Isaiah today, we see that the changes Isaiah speaks of aren't changes that make people useful for their former lives. The desert that burst into blossom, it isn't farmed with intensive labor. The deaf don't hear because they need to get back to being productive members of society. Not a single one of us leaps like a deer to get through the daily grind of earning rent money for our rent and for our groceries. In this oracle, we don't see people normalized for the old world we've made. We don't see people made to be just like everyone else. This is overabundance, past the expectation of even the majority of people with average abilities. Isaiah imagines a new world where new life exceeds the bounds of what we've come to expect of ourselves, of our world, of our lives. And we'll lose out on the profound eruption Isaiah offers if we're content with a returning to who we were before Jesus met us. Instead of bodies that don't conform and don't act in the way that makes them normal, Isaiah offers us something abnormal. And Jesus fulfills that promise. Unnatural care. Goodness beyond nature. Beauty that exceeds what we know. I thought about this as I came across a newsletter from the L'Arche community in Bethlehem that our family visited over the summer. L'Arche is an intentional community for people across the spectrum of cognitive abilities. And I read about how a few years ago, one of their community members who's intellectually and developmentally disabled, her name was Sana, she was diagnosed with cancer. And Amal, her caregiver, would accompany her to outpatient chemotherapy. Other members of L'Arche would go to visit Sana when she was in chemotherapy to encourage her and be with her. And they would bring snacks and they sang songs and they laughed together. And when her treatment regime ended, Sana realized how important this community had become to the people of the outpatient clinic. She asked them all a question. But who will make them smile if we aren't there? And so the community decided they would go back to the chemotherapy center twice a week with sandwiches and fruit and drinks. They wanted to remain faithful to their friends. Sana died a year later from her cancer. And not long after that, a phone call came into the community. It was a man from Hebron who had tracked down who these people were who kept coming to the clinic because he wanted to thank them for their visits. Sana and her friends didn't come for natural kinship, for people who we consider our family members, but because she had made a new life, a new community. Your visits changed our lives, the man told the community leader. It's almost impossible to find a reason to smile when you're in the middle of a chemotherapy session. And yet when you people walk in, everyone's mood changes. You remind us that we are alive and that we're able to enjoy life, even in the midst of the ordeal of chemotherapy. Friends, that is unnatural. It is unnatural to find joy in the midst of chemotherapy. I seriously doubt that any of the L'Arche members with profound intellectual disabilities cured anyone of cancer. But I know that they healed people. I know that around us, in unexpected places, joy and beauty is erupting beyond nature. It happens in the beautiful game, or even with a heartbreaking loss by Brazil. We still got to see beauty, even though they didn't win. And I know this, there's a new world erupting around us. There are fissures of it everywhere. It's in us and within us and between us. And the season of expectation, of waiting for Jesus, beyond what we know how to even expect, let's pay attention. Let's look together. Amen.